Celtics Reddit Podcast.
Back out to Smart. Fakes the pass all the time. Three. Bang!
It's Williams three. Mobs it up for Robert Williams.
Should he go? Taylor Brown.
Tatum. Durant, the long reach. Tatum crossover, pull-up jumper. It's good. 50 points for Jason Tatum.
Hello and welcome to the Celtics Reddit Podcast. Ben Vallis here. Thank you for joining us. Hope you're doing well. The Celtics finishing strong in Toronto and get a much needed win after maybe the most disappointing outing so far this season against the Spurs one game earlier. Joining us to talk all about it, Jackson, aka Rickman Lives. Jackson, how's it going?
Good, man. My cat wants to be involved, so he might stick his head in every now and then.
To tell us how much he loves Enos Kanter's new name.
Yeah.
Freedom.
He's big on freedom. Yeah.
A New Zealand correspondent is also here, Joe, aka No Scrotes McFlow. No Scrotes McFly, rather.
McFlow.
Joe, how you doing, sir?
Yeah, good things. Good things, Ben. You know, I sort of feel like I'm a part-time correspondent these days, but you know, that's what suits right now, doesn't it? So
absolutely. Look, yeah, we love to have you here when we can have you. So tell the world what's new with our New Zealand correspondent.
What's new? Shivers. Well, I've been rolling around for the last 2 weeks and dad bought a SSV8 ute. You know, the ones with the hard top on the back of the deck, you know.
Oh, I'd like to
it's
say
the VY model. anyway.
Not a car guy, but sure, please continue.
Yeah, I'm not particularly either. But it's fun, but this is just the first thing that sprang to mind. But shivers, man. The price of gas these days, I don't know what it's doing in Australia. It's normally cheaper than it is here, but I'm feeling the pinch on that. But yeah, anyway, I guess that's enough idle chit chat from me.
Well, okay. Well, Joe, I do want to start with you, so we will require a little bit more idle chit chat on your part.
Okay.
We've been doing the show for a few years now, and you've always been this real proponent of let's hold our judgment until we're 20 games into the season. Well, we're 20 games in. We're 11-10 after this win today against the Raptors. Just generally speaking, and then we'll narrow down from here. Where are you at with this team?
I think this team's a 12-9 team, but that's still not that good.
Sure.
So I'm setting my expectations for the rest of the year at hovering around a sort of mid-40s. I'm thinking like 44 wins. So that's where my expectations are set, and I'll be disappointed or pleased accordingly. I think the record's pretty representative of where they are. I think you'd normally expect to not snatch defeat from the jaws of victory on a couple more occasions. But there's some inherent weaknesses, and that's sort of shown up in some late game execution. So I guess the record's pretty indicative. I don't know, what do you reckon?
So I parked my car in the parking lot of we're going to be bad to start, but we're going to be much better at the end of the season. And I'm still very much sticking by with that. Losses like the one against the Bulls, losses like the one against the Spurs seems to like rattles that a little bit.
The Wizards. Mm-hmm.
The Wizards, yeah. There are plenty of examples, to be perfectly honest. Yeah. So yeah, it wavers a little bit. Then now I start to think like maybe we are just like one of those, you know, 500 teams, basically the team that we were last year, with a few different positives and a few different negatives and whatnot. But I still think there's another clear gear that we can get into, and that will translate to Jason Tatum not shooting 7% from the field like for long stretches at a time. So I think as soon as he starts going, I think we will get going. And then you've got all the other factors like health and things like that. But you know, there are guys who are stepping up. There are guys who are, you know, just are a non-factor, unfortunately. So I think, yeah, I think 10-10 is pretty representative. If you told me after 20 games we'd be 10-10 or we'd be 11-10 after 21, I would say that's probably about right. I expect our last 20 to be far superior to our first 20, but I'll still stand by that. But I mean, I'm basing that off my fandom.
So you're not disappointed?
You know, the manner of some of the losses, yes, some of that would be disappointing. So the Celtics are like a minute-to-minute experience, you know, and if I try to have some, you know, perspective of where I was at the start of the season, if you said that, I wouldn't be like, yeah, okay, I guess that's something to be that's something that would be realistic. But like in the manner of some of the losses that we've had, you know, mind you, coming off a win today that was like largely forgettable as far as I'm concerned, you know, I'm still very much in that just that gray area of, you know, I think a trade gets us into a position where we're probably not going to be, you know, superior and far better than we are now. But, you know, it's like you said, Joe, expectations, right? I feel like they shift and you readjust them depending on where you are in the season. And it's hard to say. They haven't really changed, but I've also lowered them.
But here's the thing. Yeah. Here's the thing, boys. If we set our expectations in advance, we can then we can hold on to them and then be disappointed or happy, you know, like on a sort of rational basis.
Definitely the
point.
Know? Yeah.
So you know, like, because I'm just reading between the lines here. I think you are a little disappointed, Jackson, because I'm disappointed. I thought we'd be better. But if you set those expectations in advance, then it sort of kind of explains how you're feeling.
I guess, like, if we're still like this at game 60, then I'd be far more disappointed than I am now. I'm just sort of, I've tempered them somewhat, even though I kind of expect us to be here. But, like, you know, the journey that you go through just molds it in a certain way. So, yeah, it's a very fence-sitting sort of answer here. But, you know, it is where we wanted it to be, but I kind of expected us to be better. Take that for a contradiction, you know, but it's just how I feel.
Yeah. I hate judgment-free zone.
There's actually a lot of improvements that you can track throughout the season so far. Like Grant Williams has been a surprise and delight situation as far as like how he's suddenly emerged as like a legitimate role player and a legitimate outside shooting threat. Josh Richardson, who we extended, and that was a baffling notion early on. Suddenly, he's looking like a legitimate role player, and the, you know, NBA defenses, modern NBA defenses, are always going to give up those little mid-range pull-ups. Miraculously, out of nowhere, Schroeder has been hitting those. That's kind of always been a part of Richardson's game, and he does seem to be like finding a groove with this team. Romeo Langford as well. Like we kind of need, like, championship teams need like three thirds, that's the way I see it, to really succeed. And we seem to have like one, maybe two thirds of the whole pie going at once. And at the moment, our like higher contributing role players and our immediate guys off the bench are all contributing well. But unfortunately, it's all hinging on the final third, which is the Jays, or at least one Jay sort of being a consistent, competent, like superstar / star at all times. And unfortunately, that's not what's firing right now. But a week or two ago, that third was fine. Tatum was like suddenly, you know, supposedly out of his slump, doing well, but we didn't have the other contributing pieces firing at that time. So can we have all thirds firing at the same time when we need them to at the end of the season or towards the end of the season when we're battling for like a non-play-in spot? I don't know. John Corrales called this game against the Raptors on his podcast today the best win of the Celtics season so far. Jackson, where does that sit with you? Does that ring true for you?
That made me dizzy to say that was the best win of the season so far. without having any context of what he was saying, I guess would part of that be attributed to the fact that Tatum plays like ass, yet
completely,
somehow
yes.
finds himself to be a plus 13 with 10 assists with other guys performing? Sure. Yeah. I'll take that. Absolutely. But I don't know. I'm a simple man, guys. I like entertaining basketball. I'll take a boring win over an entertaining loss every single day of the week. But that was a game I watched and forgot about almost immediately. You'd tell me any story, anything out of that game, and I would have to think about it for a second. So best win of the season. You know, that's one way to look at it. But, you know, I mean, a win is a win, and I'll take any win, but it's certainly not the best one as far as I'm concerned.
What do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean... boring ones are good. Teams have boring ones, don't they? Mm-hmm. And I'm a bit of a Raptophile, so I sort of like any win over them, I sort of regard as a little bit significant, you know, because they really did own us for a long time. And I know a lot of the principles aren't there anymore, but I think that they're a formidable organization, so any win over them is a good one.
Yeah, do you kind of feel like the Raptors like pull out like the file, like the Celtics file, and like blow the dust off, and it's like, all right, we're back, we're playing the Celtics. Here's the formula. Let's go and execute on this. Like, I just always feel like I agree with you, Joe. They always seem to have like the formula to beat the Celtics, no matter the iteration. Is that kind of where you're coming at there?
It's like Australia versus New Zealand in cricket. Doesn't matter how good we are. We're going to lose to you guys.
We're all
like 130 for six in India now, so we're probably going to lose today.
The only thing I wasn't going to bring it up is text messaging.
Yeah. Yeah. We're 1-0 in unsolicited dick pics, clearly.
And that's what really matters, right?
Couple of remarks.
You got to look it up. If the brother-in-law. What is this chick up to?
If you're part of 90% of our listeners who are based in the US, just Google Australian cricket scandal. Sort by recent, because there have been a few.
Yeah.
And read about the most recent one.
Yeah. Skip over the sandpaper one. That's a doozy. Yeah. But-
So, a couple of remarks here from the people of Celtic to Reddit. User J76951 noted that the rebounding numbers, 64 to 46 in favor of the Celtics, refreshing to see. Was that notable for you guys, Joe? Like, it feels like not that long ago, the Celtics were that sort of team where you just sort of frustratingly watching the offensive rebounds for the opposition tally up while we continued to give the other team additional possessions. Is that something that you noticed as you were watching this game in recent games?
Well, in retrospect, perhaps it is. In retrospect, I'm like, oh, I remember one sequence where I was like, there we go again. But realistically, you keep the teams at bay. I think the Celtics are a good defensive team. They're a very good defensive team, and they can stave off runs if they clean up the offensive rebounding. It's a huge contributor to it. And the reality is that Toronto never really got their teeth into this game. They never really had us on the ropes, eh? It was always kind of like we'd let them back in. So the flow of this game sort of suggests that we were always in control defensively. And so, yeah, so obviously we were cleaning up enough pill.
Yeah. Enes Kanter.
Freedom Kanter will do that for you. Yeah. An automatic 10 and 10, even if it doesn't like an overall neutral contributor, just 10 and 10 every single time.
Yeah. Unreal.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, Jackson, did you want to expand on the Kanter minutes at all? I just feel like we should pay him his due a little bit, because maybe it's just that he's the perfect third string center and like now he's really found his niche in the NBA, but you expect him to be bad, and it's not like he's flawless. I mean, he's definitely not flawless, but like he's been solid, right?
I think he's the better version of Kanter than we had 2 seasons ago. The Enes Kanter I remember from 2 seasons ago would miss 3 shots at the rim and get 3 rebounds and then score the last one. And, you know, fine, I'm okay with that. But it seems to me like, you know, he's cleaning up everyone's shots a lot more. His free throws are better. And, you know, his plus minus, particularly in the last game against San Antonio, was, you know, compared to that of Al Horford and also the timing of when the Spurs went on a run against us, you know, he's obviously contributing. He's obviously got a place on this team. And I think he's reveling in the whole, you know, I am the outspoken patriot sort of social media presence that he's earned for himself now. And I think that's sort of, you know, invigorated him a little bit. And maybe it's translating on the court. Maybe those things aren't related at all. But I think he's definitely the better version than we had 2 seasons ago. Maybe it's just the number 11. You know, I think as soon as since the number 11 got vacated, it's just, you know, you don't seem to be having a positive outing here. Ask good old Mr. Pritchard. But no, I'm happy with what he's giving us so far, for sure.
Are we going to have a yarn about Kanter's political points of view, or are we keeping it strictly hoop here?
No, I mean, it's strictly Celtics, and he's a Celtic, and it's relevant. So tell us what you know, Joe.
Well, I was just going to say, first of all, this is the hoop point. For me, he sits in the Dennis Schroeder kind of box for this team, which is, I don't really like Dennis Schroeder's game, like, at all. But he provides stuff that we need that we don't really have anywhere else. Mm. We don't really have reliable dribble penetration from anyone other than Schroeder, you know. And I would say maybe Jalen to a secondary extent. We need it, you know. Schroeder's a ball hog, and he shoots at a too low a percentage, but he does stuff we need. So you kind of just got to take the Faustian pact a little bit with him, and it's probably a little bit the same with Kanter. I don't really like his game at all. I hate the way he moves, you know, like the aesthetics of his game suck. Can't stand it. He's not a passer. He's all these things I hate, but
he sets a good screen.
He got Tatum free on a tie screen. Tatum missed that layup right at the end of the game, and yeah, that was a good screen. Look, we need rebounding. We really, really need it. We always need rebounding. We need a target rolling to the middle in some fashion. So if Rob's not vertically spacing, at least he can, like, I don't know what you call what he does, like longitudinally space. Like, he takes up some sort of space and provides a target. So he provides something we need at very low cost. So I can't hate on his game. Given his role, could care less if he got traded.
I want to hear the juicy political perspective.
Basically, the vibe of what he's saying is along the lines of, hopefully what I said, the mangled version of events I said before has been edited out by now, but basically, is he that serious, you know, or is it sort of a little bit of is he thirsting a little bit for attention here? And I thought, like, I'm not a LeBron, like, I'm a LeBron hater. I don't like him at all, on a sports fan level. But I still thought, like, his calling out of LeBron, it smelled a little bit fake to me. It was sort of like the kind of stand you make when you don't expect your stand to really actually change anything. Like, what was LeBron, what did he really expect LeBron to do after that, you know? And I'm not I'm not a LeBron guy at all, but that's just the vibe that I got. So I'm a little loath to, like, lionize him for his stance, even though I agree with it, obviously what's happening with the Uyghurs is shocking, and there does seem to be some hypocrisy. But I'm just not 100% willing to, like, you know, fully get on the Kanter train and be like, yeah, he's our boy. I love everything he's about. There's just something that just smells a little bit like maybe he's, you know, if you are going to take a negative view of it, like, he might be setting himself up for a post-playing career kind of role. Carving out a little media role or something like that. Hmm. Now that's just idle speculation, right? But yeah, that was just my vibe on it. I was just a little bit like, oh, I don't know that this quite rings true for me. Like, going after LeBron particularly like that felt like a little bit more point scoring than anything else.
You went after MJ as well,
right? I mean, but what's gonna? I don't know. Like. Is that going to affect change? I don't know. Like, I just, maybe I'll just leave you guys. What do you guys reckon? What do you reckon of what I reckon? What do you actually reckon?
Reconception.
What do you think, Jackson?
yeah. We're going a few layers deep.
Anyone who wants to come out and speak their mind on political topics that are clearly important, as this Chinese genocide, and also, you know, Erdogan in Turkey, you know, pick your poison with Kanter. You know, he's clearly a political guy and he cares about these things. I genuinely believe that. I don't think it's all, you know, posturing for social media points. Is his vigor and is his sort of motivations behind bringing it up all about, you know, affecting change, or all about, you know, trying to actually move something, or is it a little bit sensationalism? You know, I think it's definitely a bit of column A, a bit of a column B. It's calling out Nike, you know, specifically, you know, that is tied to the NBA is, like, I feel like is a little bit of, you know, posturing, you know, particularly when the Celtics have a great big Nike tick on their jersey as well that he happens to wear. Like, unless if he wanted to do the, funny you mentioned Jordan, remember when Jordan went to the Olympics and they wore the Nike over the was it the Reebok
the,
or was
the
it
flag? The flag was over the yeah. over the Reebok.
Yeah,
jacket.
So if yeah, you yeah. if he wanted to like, you know, put, like, you know, the Hong Kong flag over the Nike tick and the NBA somehow let that fly, then, you know, that feels like something that would be in his, you know, realm of, you know, I'm making a statement here. But yeah, I mean, it's very easy to point at LeBron James, and I'll jump on the let's all shit on LeBron James wagon, you know, any day of the week. But, you know, I think it'd be easier to do so about, you know, how bad of a movie Space Jam 2 was rather than his shoe deal with Nike, because how
the
many
real
other
atrocity.
People? Yeah, precisely. I was going to say something that I didn't mean about it. What things I would rather do than watch Space Jam 2 again. I won't do it. But yeah, you know, he's not alone. Like, to act like, what, you know, Adidas doesn't have, you know, child labor, or New Balance doesn't to some degree. Maybe not New Balance. I don't know. I'm getting a little bit lost here.
But, they would never.
Yeah, no, of course not. But yeah, I feel like his heart's in the right place, but you know his motivations behind going after like LeBron in a very public way is sort of, you know, hey everyone, here I am as well, you know, old 10-10 Cantor over here, Freedom Cantor over here, and changing the name too. It's like it just reeks of meta world peace. It just reeks of, you know, like it's something Kyrie Irving would do. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Freedom Irving or Kyrie Liberation. Yeah, precisely. Yeah. So, like, I think that that doesn't really. I mean, you are free to do whatever you want, obviously, and I think that's funny, to be perfectly honest. But I mean, as far as like his motivations are concerned, I think he just likes, you know, ruffling some feathers, to be honest. I think that's all it is.
I think you guys said it all. There's not much that I can add to that. Only in agreeing.
Join us, Ben. Join us on the political hot take train.
He seems to lack. Well, he does lack credibility, and so the impact of his statements and his movements aren't significant. At least that's how I feel. So when he does or says something and it makes a headline, it doesn't hit the same as if it was someone with more stature, or because apparently he is associated. And I don't have the details here, so I'm going to sort of hover above the real truth here, but apparently he's got some associations with political people and otherwise in Turkey that they aren't necessarily the most people-centric of people. So it's not like he has a completely clean slate and he's sort of operating from a standpoint of total innocence here. So that I think detracts from his credibility, and the fact that he's kind of like just emerged as this sort of sudden social justice warrior, as opposed to that being part of his persona throughout his career. It just doesn't hit home. But at the same time, power to anyone who wants to speak out, who has a platform about issues of concern. So I guess I almost have a standpoint of indifference, like power to him, but it doesn't necessarily hit home as well. But I'm interested to see where it goes. And in the meantime, as long as he wants to continue gathering all of those rebounds, I'm cool with it. We'll see where it goes. Sorry, Joe.
No, that's cool. Sometimes when you make a point, it's quite good to sit there and listen to other people say, and you can think of a better way maybe to get at the heart of what you were trying to say. Mm-hmm. And I'm a pretty socially conservative person. I don't want to get into that because this isn't the space, but suffice to say that the comments that say LeBron might make about Black Lives Matter, and as compared with his seeming silence on China, I kind of find myself wanting to stick up for LeBron a little bit there, because proximity matters, you know, like it just does, you know. There's like this the causative link between LeBron having a Nike endorsement and Nike having manufacturing facilities in China and the NBA as a whole having, you know, a business partnership with Chinese broadcasters. There's a few chains of in the causative link away, you know, between that and Uyghurs being, you know, being detained.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's – I don't think it's fair to expect, like, LeBron to have that much power to, you know, pull on that causative chain, if you like, and make a change. And of course, it's different for him. If a black guy gets shot, he's going to feel way differently about it than, you know, he's going to feel way differently about it to a different set of people that he's not, you know, connected with in the same way. Of course he is.
Sure.
You know,
he does in the sense that he's a Muslim. You can understand that, right?
Well, I'm sort of talking about LeBron here having his connection. Yeah, so Kendrick being a Muslim obviously connects him to the Uyghurs. But I just want to say that, like, qualifying as a social conservative person, I still find myself wanting to give LeBron a little bit of a break on those grounds. Like, of course he would be a bit more concerned with what's happening in the States than China.
Yeah.
And I'll leave my comments there, but yeah.
Well, so, yeah, I agree, but I do think Cantor's right in that it's going to take someone like LeBron, because no one internally in China has the free speech opportunities to speak out on these issues. So it is going to require someone foreign to China, but with a global platform, maybe like LeBron James, to speak out on these things to enact change. And so calling out LeBron James on that is important because he's maybe one person in a short list of people who could, if they did publicly speak out on this, you know, even if it's just raising better global awareness of these issues, these atrocities that are occurring in China, that could be impactful. Cantor alone doing it is, as we've discussed, not impactful enough. And like I've just said, no one in China can achieve this themselves. But of course, like you said, Joe, you know, problems that are literally closer to home are going to be more important to LeBron James. And so it's kind of okay for him to be focusing on that. So I don't know. Maybe that's where we need to leave it. But it is interesting because Cantor plays for the Celtics. He is playing well in his role. And yet there's this whole thing going on. But did you see the freedom chants that the players were making in the tunnel before the game today? Like, it does seem
like
he has their full support.
Yeah, yeah. And he's clearly a well-liked guy, hey, in his locker room, you know.
Yeah, well, our, you know, close personal friend of the show, Chris Forsberg, used to have the Enes Kanter show. I feel like that would take on a whole new form if they were to bring back that podcast. Probably be very political and, you know, based on the few minutes that Kanter's getting on the court, not very hoops-based. But, guys, will you allow me to segue back to the Raptors game today? Just very briefly.
The game was so boring, we had to pull the political card. Yes,
it was a good time.
Where I saw that chant was on our chat, and I was really proud of my little meme that I made. So I just wanted to shout out my meme to the boys.
It was very good.
I'll have to try and remember to flash it up on the YouTube version of this pod. Please subscribe, like, share, etc. User Spinexa wrote, "Us being able to win when JB and JT aren't playing to their standards is a massive revelation." Jackson, like we touched on Tatum's poor shooting performance earlier, but what did you make of Tatum's performance in this game? Because obviously he was impactful, at least down the stretch.
Yeah, I mean, when you are the player profile and you have, you know, you are the guy that Tatum is, and you expect him to, you know, put up like, you know, massive amounts of points and whatnot. When he does shoot, you know, 12, 16%, whatever it was from the field, you can't help but walk away from the game, you know, with a bit of a sour taste in your mouth. But 10 assists is nothing to be sneezed at. I think he had 8 rebounds as well, too. I've noticed this season, he seems to be making it far more of his business to crash the boards, which is great. I thought he could have probably had another maybe 3 or 4 assists on top of that. I think there were a few bricked threes. There was one great little like bounce pass that he put into
Richardson.
Richardson,
second quarter.
Langford, yeah, he just like spilt it out, and he so many like just, you know, cross court passes to like Langford or whoever who missed threes and whatnot. So he could have had another couple on there too. So I mean, when you aren't shooting the ball, you know, the one thing that you would expect him to do is get other guys involved, and 10 assists, you know, be it, you know, fortuitous or not, definitely represents that he was doing that. And a plus 13 as well, too. I know, like, you know, the plus minus can be misrepresented and, you know, twisted to any way that you want it to. But, you know, that says something that he was the only starter in the positive. So, look, I think if he continues to be in this shooting slump, if he is putting up those kind of, you know, assist numbers and he is, you know, making the right play and still crashing the boards, you know, you're going to live with that. But I still think we're not going to, you know, find our next gear until he unlocks that consistent level of shooting. And even if it just only goes for a month and then regresses again, well, that's going to be a good month. That's going to be like a, you know, we'll go like, you know, 6-2 in that month or whatever, how many games we play. We'll win more than we lose. So I'm encouraged by it, but it's still probably not the kind of game that you want Tatum to have.
You said there's a post on RNBA that said he's first in shots taken in the NBA. Did you know that?
Yeah, it's mental, right?
Number one.
Yeah. And 8 is higher than I thought it would be. I thought it would be lower.
I thought it would be in the sort of hundreds. Yeah.
I don't know, man. Well, Ben, yours. I feel like I've a lot of the ground I would cover on Tatum's possibly already been covered before. So I'll give you a crack.
Well,
how gracious of me.
No, that's fine. We spent a lot of the season talking about him. Naturally, he's our quote unquote best player. I guess I liked that in the fourth quarter, he was like, I'm only going to do things that win us this game. And that was pretty clear through most of the fourth quarter. He missed a few bunnies, which were, you know, they were the right shots to take at the time. He just missed them because he's in this slump. What I would love to see Tatum do is take on that approach from the opening tip of the game. I'm only going to make winning plays. I'm only going to make the right play right from the get-go, because if he's looking to pass out of those double teams, and he's always going to see those double teams straight away, and he's kicking to guys like Langford, like Grant Williams, who can shoot and knock them down, then suddenly the opposing defense can't afford to double him, or they need to adjust because the points are coming elsewhere and they need to shift their defensive focus elsewhere. And then suddenly maybe those shots do become available for Tatum, and that's a way for him to sort of settle in and find a groove. It seems like, well, it doesn't seem like, it's definitely his approach at the moment is like, get your shots in, get your shots up. You know, whether you're double teamed, whether you're closely guarded on the perimeter with very little motion, and you can, you know, anyone who's watched more than like 10 Tatum games can pick a mile off when he's going to go into his step back. And so like professional NBA scouts and like defensive scouting, they have to be hyper aware of that. And so I'd love to see him like change up, I guess, like the pacing of his approach. So it was really good to see that in a microcosm in the fourth quarter. I'd love to see that throughout the course of a full game, and then ultimately as he matures as a player throughout the course of a full season. And then maybe we don't get these slow starts, and maybe we aren't sitting here at 11 and 10 ultimately disappointed, because going back to what we first talked about, I am disappointed. My expectations were crazy high. This is the first time that we're really going to play through Tatum and Brown, and we got rid of all those stragglers, the Gordon Haywards, the Kyrie Irvings, the Kemba Walker, all these bloody useless all-stars who are just detracting from the real impact, from the real superstars. And it's like, okay, like now there's no more excuses, right? These guys need to do it. And they're young, they're immature. I think they need to change up the approach. And take it from me. I played in the Redfern C-grade mixed league tonight. Got a few assists. I thought my approach was pretty good. So if you're going to listen to anyone,
well,
Jason,
it was
Tatum,
red fern.
Some fists, yeah. No, I mean, don't listen to me, obviously. But
in the mixed league,
To summarize, liked his fourth quarter. Would like to see that applied to a much larger sample size. So interesting tweet here from Taylor Snow, who said in the home opener versus Toronto, the Celtics were 32-for-82 field goal, 11-for-34 3-point. And then tonight, they were 34-and-82 field goal percentage and 12-for-34 3-point shots. Boston lost the first game by 32 and won the second game by 12, which is to say that our defense is vastly improved.
Yeah. It's a mental stat. That's remarkable.
Yeah. It's a really nice snapshot of like, you know, we talked about there have been improvements through the season, and obviously the defense is the primary one. Before we move on to sort of some more holistic stuff, guys, talked about the game. We talked about kind of the season so far. Any other standouts from this game? I mentioned Grant Williams and Romeo Langford. Is there anyone else that you want to sort of shout out from this game in particular?
I'll take the opportunity to say that, you know, Josh Richardson with 18 points off the bench, you know, was much needed, particularly if we didn't have, you know, a Schroeder. And with Jaylen Brown paying about like, what, 60% of his force and his potential that he can. So there's going to be games where Richardson, you know, is the scapegoat, and he just stinks the place up, and everyone's going to be like, why is he here? Why did we do this to him? But, you know, I think it's important to appreciate the games where, you know, he puts in a really solid performance on both ends of the floor. And I thought that was tonight. So I'll give a shout out to old Jay Rich.
Yeah. Richardson seems to me to be like, the kind of guy he's kind of almost like how Evan Turner was, you know? Like, Evan Turner's not at his best when he's shooting threes. Richardson just seems like so much more of an effective player when he's taking shots from the elbow. And you know, I don't know how you guys find this in your experience as players, but I feel like the one thing that the three-point revolution forgets is that shots in rhythm are so much better than shots that are not in rhythm or in your comfort range, you know, and that's what I feel like that's why players sometimes maybe are a bit resistant to it, because Have you guys ever done this in a game where you've been like, oh, I should take the three, you know, and you might force yourself to step back when your body doesn't really want to do it? Mm-hmm. I sort of feel like that it affects your flow and like made baskets are so important, you know, because they stem the, well, one, the other team's taking the ball out of the net. And secondly, they just keep the scoreboard ticking over. They just keep that scoreboard pressure on the other team. And there's a value in guys that can contribute like that. You know, I'm not sure that analytics has accounted for variance correctly yet. And I feel like Richardson's a significantly lower variance scorer when he's getting to those elbow free throw line jumpers.
I've made 6 3-pointers my entire playing career. I remember every single one of them. So, no, as far as like rhythm goes with the three, can't hold you there. But, no, I completely agree with what you're saying. Yeah, I'd much rather the shot, you know, go in, you know, than not go in. And, you know, if that ends up, you know, being a tougher two than an open three for someone like a Richardson, then, yeah, absolutely. I'd much rather him look for those kind of shots.
Yeah. It's so funny that you mentioned how we shouldn't derive too much from single game plus minus. And, like, Grant Williams had a good game, right? Like, he was kind of a standout performer. Finished a minus 10 to Jason Tatum's plus 13. Marcus Smart is the person I wanted to give a shout out to, who's been fantastic lately and really able to penetrate into the paint, which I guess I didn't think was a part of his game. He put up a few more shots than we might expect of him this game, 16 field goal attempts, which is a little high for what we've seen from him so far this season, but 8 rebounds, 6 assists, 21 points. He really is sort of finding this groove as a pure point guard while maintaining his defensive prowess there. So worth giving a shout out to. I don't think we win this game without Marcus Smart, and he did a really good job for the most part on the Raptors guards there. So I want to get to the underrated plays of this game so far. So I'm going to play these for you and mumble over them as we watch them. Yeah, I want to highlight this. So this is Smart finding Jaylen Brown on a really smart cut in transition. It was, you know, interesting that we were just talking about Marcus Smart. It was a really good find there by Marcus and a really good cut by a slowly ramping up Jaylen Brown. And this one here is one of many drive and kicks from Tatum, where we see him as soon as he sees that double team, he kicks it out to Josh Richardson. Josh Richardson gets to his spot in that sort of mid-range pocket that we talked about, and a really timely bucket there to sort of put things away. I want to pivot to the plays of the game as well, guys. But first play of the game is Jaylen getting to that same mid-range pocket, and that's a shot that he's been hitting prior to his injury, and I'm sure he'll find that form. And now he penetrates again. And gets that sort of spinning behind the back pass to Grant Williams, who is just money from three currently. It's a really nice sort of silky pass there. Here's the replay from Jaylen Brown and kind of this like Showtime spin behind the back pass. Very, very elite Magic Johnson style pass. One of the play here, which as I believe Smart, this is Horford bringing the ball up in transition and taking more dribbles than he's ever taken in a single possession before finally we see the swing pass to Marcus Smart, who hits an extremely timely three-pointer. And the reason I wanted to highlight that as the play of the game is because if there was ever a point in this game where the Raptors looked like they were maybe going to strike, it was that moment. They had really sort of narrowed the lead, and that was a really timely, albeit very ill-advised, contested shot from Marcus Smart, but he hit it, and then we kind of never looked back from that point. So a bit of ball movement there and a bit of how do you say, clutch bucketry from Marcus Smart to sort of put things away.
That was like one and lost in the third, man.
Yeah, totally.
That was like part of a 7-0 run, I think, too, after the Raptors had gone up two, and they completely botched like a 3-on-1 layup, and then we just, yeah, I think we went 7-0, and then, yeah, never looked back from there. So, yeah, no, I stand behind that as probably the most important play of the game, sure.
So another important thing that was going on during the game was we have our Slack chat, formerly known as the Build Around Marcus Smart Society. And there are two other people in that chat, Celtics J and Wayne Spoonie. And one of them uttered a pretty dirty thought about trading Jason Tatum. So I ask you guys this, Jackson, I'll start with you. Mm-hmm. What is your dirtiest Celtics related thought that you've had this season, like, I guess.
Oh, this season. I went ever.
Well, if you want to go season, ever, that's fine.
I would have loved to have seen LeBron play for us.
Oh, that is dirty. That's exactly
because why not? Hey, because why not? Like, that would just piss off so many people. He would like LeBron's. Like, everyone wants to hate on LeBron anyway, and then he comes to the Celtics, the Boston Celtics. It would just be like, you know, the Garnett, Pierce, Ray Allen, Big Three times 50. It's disgusting. I don't like it, but I think it would have been. It's a dirty thought, all right.
That is dirty. That's so much dirtier than what I had. That
I've had some absolutely filthy thoughts about John Wall, and it's because I haven't seen him playing. It's because I haven't seen him playing in ages, obviously.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, the high school hottie, right? Mm-hmm. Wonder how she's looking. Yeah. Well,
not great, Bob.
Sometimes I thought, oh, you know, like I love having Al Horford back on the team, but I wanted, oh, what would Horford plus filler for John Wall? Because there is a certain amount of redundancy with Horford that there wouldn't be with John Wall, I don't think. John Wall, at least the John Wall I remember, you know.
Yeah, the Horford redundancy thing is tough with how many games Rob Williams has missed recently. It's like he's sort of a central hardware for us right now, Horford, and I don't know if we'd get that back with John Wall, but I know what you mean. Like, you sort of, you're limited with like what contracts fit and like what's tradable. So yeah, that's a dirty thought.
The other dirty thought I had, and oh, forgive me, Father, but I do love Rubio, and I wondered how a smart for Rubio swap might work. Mm-hmm. Just be a different look, you know.
I've had that thought this season as well. That was one of the dirty thoughts I wanted to unleash on you guys, but I veered away from it in recent games because I feel like Smart has kind of come into his own
really well.
A little bit. Yeah, has that sort of changed your approach to that thought?
Yeah, I mean, I'd love Rubio anyway, you know, without having to go at Smart. But like, I love Smart. He's my favorite player, you know. Sometimes frustrating, but he's my favorite player, and for the reasons that we see all the time, how many momentum shifting plays does he make? Even on that jump ball against the Spurs, right, where he out jumped, I forget who it was, DeJounte Murray, he got the tap and he tipped it to somebody who makes a lot of money for the Celtics, who really didn't try hard enough to catch that ball.
Well, that kind of segues into my dirty thoughts, and these are very vague thoughts, as the majority of my thoughts are, and that has just been, it's very non-specific as well, but floating both the Jays, either of the Jays, on the trade market and seeing what we could get back through them, which I know is like blasphemous for most Celtics fans, but these thoughts have occurred to me in sort of the deepest, darkest doldrums of the season so far. Like after that Spurs game, like after that first Raptors game, you know, like whenever I see people talk about, oh, the Jays can't coexist online, normally I shrug it off. But, you know, this is a safe space. We're talking about dirty thoughts. I acknowledge these as dirty thoughts and not legitimate thoughts. But it has crossed my mind multiple times, like maybe pair either Jay up with a player they can sort of work well in tandem with. Because like, how many plays do we really see where it's like Tatum and Brown worked well together on that one to get the bucket? You know, like it's kind of either one of them and a contributing role player. It's never often like, oh, look how well they set each other up, and you know, they're both so young and, you know, blah, blah, blah. We talk about this all the time. I'm not willing to give up on them yet, but I have had those dirty thoughts. So, yeah. Like, I might go to confession and get those off my chest.
That invokes the Fermi paradox, if you ask me. Are you guys familiar with the Fermi paradox?
No, educate us.
It is the overwhelming probability that there is other intelligent life in the universe, yet there is absolutely zero evidence to suggest it.
Yeah.
You would be absolutely certain that Brown and Tatum eventually at some stage in their careers would be good enough to, you know, at least make the finals or maybe win a championship.
But there is zero evidence.
Have you seen anything to suggest that that's definitely going to happen? I don't know. I don't know. I still believe it, obviously. And saying zero evidence, they've been to what, two conference finals now? So
yeah, you know, it's, not like, it's not like useless it's, all-stars around when they did that.
Yeah,
bloody
precisely.
Hayward
but
and,
you know,
they did. And stuff.
There's certainly a universe where trading one of them away and getting a better fit, for lack of a better term, probably makes us a better team. But yeah, I'm not willing to sign off on that. Well, not yet. I want to keep my soul intact at least for another couple years.
Well, obviously, I've been known to peddle such filth already.
Joe,
so I'm going to offer. Yeah. Call me Larry Flint. I'm gonna try and zig a little bit here, or zag. I don't know which is which. Is it zig when others zag?
I don't know what the expression is. When everyone's zigging, it's fine, and vice versa.
I think we need to like keep in mind what the evidence, particularly of Tatum, actually is. And there is very strong evidence to suggest that he's a 6'10" guy that's going to shoot over the course of a season 45. And 39 or thereabouts, you know? He is that guy. Trust me, he is that guy. Now, equally, I think there's enough evidence to suggest that one of the factors of his game that limits him is that he doesn't put a lot of pressure on the rim. He's just not that good at it. I don't know how you can watch him and not conclude that. Brown is so much better at it. Brown gets lower. Brown's got, honestly, a better handle. Brown's a way more intuitive finisher around the rim, which is funny after Brown had those yips at the start, you know, two, 3 years ago. It was like, Brown, for goodness sakes, make a layup, mate. But he is. He's just like, you compare the two. He doesn't have like that. But I also want to defend him against criticism that isn't going to stick in the long term. Like, he's going to shoot. He's going to shoot it well. He can pass. When he draws the double, he can pass. For me, the bigger trouble that he's going to have is actually drawing the double consistently when not really being that much of a threat to put pressure on the rim. You know? So that'll open up his passing game, probably more than the other way around, I sort of feel. But, yeah, look, if Tatum's big and can shoot and the weaknesses in his game mean that he has kind of high variance offense, mm-hmm. you know? And I feel like Jaylen Brown's weaknesses, I think Jaylen's more prone to tunnel vision than Tatum is. But Jaylen also, on the flip side, puts a lot more pressure on the rim. And I think Jaylen has a lot of things, really important things, a bit better than Tatum. This is that, and I'm making a comment as to who's better. Do they play well together? No, I don't think that they do, really. Yeah, you still got to get someone better. You've still got to get a better player, or you've still got to get more value, right, than Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown in a trade out for them. That's really hard to find.
Mm-hmm. It's not happening.
Really, really hard to find.
That's why.
Like, well, depending on your view of Ben Simmons and Matisse Thybulle and Steph Curry, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Well, look, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I think if we have learned anything from Jason Tatum, it's that he does sort of figure it out the further we go into the season, and particularly after the All-Star break. And if he can have passing vision games like he had tonight, but pair that with a shooting threat, then I think that's really going to open things up for him and the team. But, you know, I'm not saying anything that we don't already know. Interesting dirty thoughts, though. And let us know in the comments if you've got, I'm sure you all do at this point where we've had this sort of topsy-turvy season. Let us know the darkest place your mind has gone to, because, you know, it's a safe space. No one's going to, I mean, I can't guarantee no one will downvote you. People probably will. People will probably downvote this episode, but we will love you and nourish you as necessary. Another thing that Celtics J pointed out in our chat, and I think I've just outed him by mentioning him there. Apologies, Celtics J. Is that Jason Tatum may have peaked last year as this sort of like faux rich man's Paul Pierce kind of character. And we're never going to see that again. So to go sort of a little meta here, I suppose I wanted to ask you guys about your own peaks in life. And Jackson, we'll start with you. Any parallels here for you? Can you tell us about when you peaked in life? Are you peaking right now, or do you anticipate peaking at some point in the future?
Geez, that's a good one. I guess I, you know, pre-COVID, living overseas, running a film studio, being about 6 kilos lighter, having a much manlier beard, and I was younger than I was. I feel like that's probably my strongest point to date. But at the same time, no, I feel like my best years are ahead of me. Absolutely, and I think Tatum is the same.
Good way to be.
Yeah.
What about you, Joe?
For sure.
There's this. It's interesting, eh? Because like, we can only do this in retrospect, right? So we're always backwards looking when you're trying to answer this question. Like, where was the peak of your life? It's impossible to look forward to know where the peak, future peak might be. But I don't know. Like 22 was a cool year for me. I was living in Vancouver in Canada, and people like the accent, man. I don't know. It's the dumbest thing, but they do. They just do. So God bless you. The other little peak would have been like 26. Man, 26 was a good 26 was a good year. But on the flip side, I was in full quarter life crisis mode at the same time. Like it was quite a polarity of an experience, you know. So on the one hand, you know, I was in the best shape of my life. I was like CrossFitting like 4 days a week in the morning, and I did this graphic design diploma, which I've never used before or since, but I loved it and enjoyed it, and had like lots of really good routines in life. And on the other hand, I was like, I don't know, that classic mid-20s thing of like, oh my gosh, I haven't made a decision so far in my life, and where am I? Shivers, I'm 90% of the way to 30, you know?
Yeah.
You got that looming, sort of Damocles, like, age 30 thing hanging over your head, you know? That you don't have to deal with so much maybe when you're past 30.
Yeah, it's kind of a relief when you get to and beyond 30 and you're like, oh, I'm oh, still yeah. there. Like, it's age so much ain't better. Nothing but a number.
It's so much better in my opinion. It's like, I don't know, I went out for the first time in weeks and weeks on Saturday, and I was like, I used to get me so pumped to go to the pub. I was like, yeah, here we go, and I was in line for 5 seconds, and I was just like, get me the fuck out of here.
Yeah,
this is so not what I want. And I was no element of jealousy whatsoever. No matter how many like young 20-year-olds like walk past me, I was just like, no, this ain't my bag.
You're
no more.
Done.
It was fine. You're done. It was fine. There's definitely a piece that you get after 30 for sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, and also I will say that I have forgotten how to socialize and even forgotten how to like kind of dress to go out. Like I've been going out a little bit recently. My wife and I, obviously we have a kid, but we've been sort of taking turns as we've come out of lockdown to have nights out each. And then we also give each other the gift of like, I'll get up and look after our daughter in the morning so you can sleep it off. But both of us have admitted to, my wife and I, of like getting out and be like, there's like a Seinfeld bit on this. Like, well, now we're out. We really got to be getting back. It's like, you're never really content in the location that you're at. It's like, no, I've got to be going. And you absolutely feel like that. I'll be very quick, but I feel like I've had three peaks. 22, similar to you, Joe. Good year. That was 2009 for me. Celtics had obviously just won the only title that they've won in my lifetime. But I had a really good share house.
I was 22 when the Celtics won. Yeah.
I had a really good share house situation, and like we just played a lot of like FIFA and NBA 2K. We had parties all the time. We were all in bands. I met Alice Cooper while playing in a band.
No way!
I had like just a really good sort of, it was like a good creative / lazy time where like I just had a job that paid for all of my impulsive habits, which we'll leave at that. And it was a really, really fun time. And then fast forward to 2019, right before we, I guess, conceived our child, my wife and I went to Japan.
Oh, the good bit.
Before that nonsense, we went to Japan. Then I went overseas to the States for work initially, but then I saw like Luka Doncic play in the States. I saw a LeBron Kawhi season opener, so the Lakers versus the Clippers there. Had this really good year of like travel across the globe and like just basically doing everything that I love, which is like eating and watching sports and drinking, as it were. And then things have obviously quietened down a lot since then. But we've had our child a year ago, and I would consider that to be the peak, because having a child is a very complex thing, and it will certainly bring about the most challenging things that you've ever experienced in your life, at least from my perspective. But at the same time, 1,000% the most joyful, the most happy experiences that I could ever possibly have imagined. And so it's hard to not feel like now is a peak as well. So maybe that just says I'm a very indecisive person. Maybe it says I just live a good life. But
it's nice to sort of contemporaneously be able to recognize the peak as well, you know, as well as being in it.
Yeah, absolutely. COVID doesn't help. COVID, some troughs in there, definitely. COVID-related troughs. But as it pertains to the Celtics, we can only hope that the Jays, their peaks are ahead of them and not behind them, because that would be dreary.
Hopefully Tatum's peak isn't also playing overseas.
that would be
good.
We're going to finish on this post from user Jay Kiaso. I've definitely messed up the pronunciation there. Their post was, tough December schedule. The Celtics' November opponents are currently a combined 21 games under 500, and Boston won 9 of 15 games. The Celtics' December opponents are currently a combined 75 games over 500. What do you think our record will be by January after this difficult stretch? Personally, says this poster, I think if shots start falling and the D holds up, we can really surprise some people coming into the new year. Guys, a schedule this difficult for a Celtics team at this juncture, do you see it as something that could potentially galvanize a team who typically plays up or down to their competition? Or is this the stretch that like permabans us to play in territory? Joe, what do you think?
I think we've got an opportunity to forge an identity as a win ugly type team. And so, look, I expect us to have a good stretch here. Yeah, have a good stretch at some point in the season. So why not now? Yeah.
Mm. We play the Lakers, and Tatum always shows up against the Lakers, so that'll be fine. We also do love a West Coast road trip, historically. So, and even in like wildly inconsistent years, you know, we can still go to Golden State, we can still go to Staples or Crypto, whatever it's called now, and put up good performances. The Crypt, yeah. we will be putting LeBron in the Crypt, I assure you. But yeah, I mean, we opened this podcast talking about how, I was talking about how I'm sort of disappointed, but I'm not, but I am, that we're 500. If we are still 500 on January 1st or one game above, I'd break your hand off right now. Now, that might be the pessimistic take probably, but if we can come out of that, like basically where we are now, surviving that West Coast trip, I would classify that as getting through it. I would be okay with that. I think that sets us up nicely for the run into the All-Star break, and we're not, you know, we're not this Sisyphean task of, you know, just trying to get up a hill that we never can seem to get up of. I think I would take that in a second.
Yeah, we've got to get the Sixers game on Thursday our time, Wednesday night in the States. And hopefully there's a sense of like kick them while they're down, maybe while Tobias Harris and Joel Embiid are like still on the up from their seemingly like pretty terrible COVID experiences. But then on the road, it's the Jazz, the Blazers, and then a back-to-back Lakers, then Clippers, who are playing well, and then the Suns. That's the road trip there, which is, and then we come back and we play the Bucks and the Warriors, then the Knicks and the Sixers. It's a brutal month. So, it's going to be a huge test for this team, and you know, it's been such a, to use Joe's terminology, high variance season, right? Like it's been such a roller coaster. We've seen so many instances of the Celtics so far. It would be great to see them really come together and just like really shit on some of these teams, for lack of a better term. So we'll see, but we've got that to look forward to. There's a comment here on the post there from user Orange Cookie. He wrote, if Tatum can progress to his normal and Rob Williams stays healthy, I think Boston can win 8 of 15, maybe 9. If he keeps this slump up, Boston will be chasing a play-in seed. Which is definitely a risk. Like at this juncture in the season, if we come out of this well under 500, then it kind of sets up the rest of our season to be chasing like either a low playoff seed or a play-in spot, which kind of, I don't know, we talked about expectations earlier, but that really shifts us out of at least my initial expectations that we'd be battling to even get into the playoffs or a play-in spot in the first place. So very important month coming up. Guys, we're about to wrap up. Any other thoughts, any other takes or miscellaneous points you want to rattle off before we wrap this one up?
No, mate, I'm done.
I have to go watch Succession, so...
Me too. I'm halfway through the episode. Yes. Nice. All right, that's going to do it for this one. Thank you for listening. Celtics Jay and Wayne Spoonie will likely be back with another podcast later this week. Jackson, Joe, love your work, guys. Thanks again.
Likewise, Ben. Joe, see ya. Thank you, mate.
All right, until next time, go Celtics. Peace.